From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. YouTube wants your money. $9.99 a month for its new service, YouTube Red, rolling out this week. Like its owner, Google, YouTube has made money off ads. Now it's looking for a monthly subscription for ad-free video and music, putting it up against tough rivals Netflix and Hulu, Spotify and Apple Music. It's another turn, if it works, in the definition of what we'll pay for in entertainment. This hour on Point, we're reading YouTube Red. You can join us on air or online, where this conversation is always on. Is ad-free YouTube worth paying for? Is this where our tastes are going, our ears and eyeballs? Join us anytime at onpointradio.org or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. Joining me now from New York is Ben Popper. He's business editor at The Verge. The online publication covers the intersection of technology, science, art, and culture. You can link to his story about YouTube Red titled Red Dawn on our website, onpointradio.org. Ben Popper, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being with us.
Oh, thanks for having me, Tom.
Also with us from New York is Emily Steele. She covers TV and the media business for The New York Times. Welcome to you, Emily.
Thank you.
And here's a little bit of the sound of YouTube's chief business officer talking with Ben Popper. This is Robert Kinsel talking about YouTube Red last week, talking about the growing crowd of competitors from web and TV, the fragmented media world out there, and who might win in it.
The internet is doing to cable what cable did to broadcast. Right? That it's just, you know, broadening a set of choices, which means total engagement is going up, but the ratings on the fewer, bigger things is going down. So I think you have to really learn how to function in a fragmented world.
How to function in a fragmented world. Ben Popper, that sounds like all of us need advice on that these days in almost everything we do. But I guess one way is to own that world. I mean, there's nobody bigger when it comes to all the pieces that are out there in video and music at this point, I guess, Ben, than YouTube.
Yeah, I certainly live in a fragmented world. I graduated from college in 2005, and I've never had a subscription to cable TV. I've never owned a pair of rabbit ears, and I pay for Netflix and Hulu, HBO, and Spotify. So I put my entertainment together as an a la carte selection of monthly subscriptions, and I also watch a ton of YouTube. I would estimate, you know, 10 to 20 hours a week, and so I'm eager to pay for that to be ad-free.
Emily, for people who haven't paid much attention since it was, hanging kitties and like all home videos kind of up there, can you just describe the range in terms of video and music of what's up on YouTube these days?
Yeah, so there's really been an explosion of offerings that are available on YouTube today. There are the kitten videos that the site really kind of got its name for. But at the same time, you see a lot of creators who are making millions of dollars a year with these original productions, whether it's people like PewDiePie or girls who tell you the latest tips for how to put on your makeup. And at the same time, too, you also see a lot of television companies and more traditional media companies create content that also is available on YouTube. So a lot of the Jimmy Fallon clips from his late night shows get millions and millions of views each night.
And Ben, on the music side, how does the offering here on YouTube stack up against Spotify and Pandora and Apple Music and all the rest?
Yeah, that's a really interesting question, Tom. So just from the perspective of how many users are going to YouTube for music, it was already the world's biggest streaming music service, so bigger than Spotify or Pandora. But of course, it was all ad-supported. So now, when you pay $10 a month, you're going to get access to Google Play Music, which is their, you know, Spotify, Apple Music competitor, as well as the entire video library of YouTube. And so in that sense, the $10 a month they're asking you to pay is quite a good value, because you're getting the same library of music you would get on Spotify, plus all of the videos you could, you know, imagine in this universe.
Describe...
It's interesting.
Emily, please, yeah.
Oh, it's interesting, too, because a lot of media executives that I talked to last week from the big television companies said, you know what, the focus of this new subscription service on YouTube isn't as much about the video and it's more about the music. So they're really seeing the value here in being of being able to listen to all that music without the ads.
And that there's just more of it? More, I mean, we think of Spotify and the others as kind of endless, but YouTube really has that much more when it comes to music, range, depth of...
Sure.
Catalogs?
Yeah, so I mean, let me explain it to you this way. I played around with the new music app, which won't be out till the end of the year. Mm-hmm. But let's say you love Taylor Swift or you love Def Leppard, right? On YouTube and Google Play Music, you're going to find all of the songs that you would find on other streaming services. In fact, you can't find Taylor Swift on Spotify, but let's put that aside. You're going to find all the same tracks, but you're also going to find all the cover versions that people did on YouTube, the version that shows you the lyrics. You're going to find the live concert where Def Leppard and Taylor Swift played together. You're not going to find that on any streaming music service. It only exists in video form. And as Emily was saying, they're going to let you experience that as video or just turn that to be audio only. So you're driving in your car listening to that concert. The live footage is now just playing as audio.
Emily, is this the new frontier? Like before, I mean, once upon a time, we paid by watching ads for what was on television. Then we paid for cable, and it was pretty polished presentations on HBO and elsewhere. Then that spread out over Netflix and all the rest. Now, are people going to be ready to pay for their neighbor's karaoke version of Taylor Swift, if that's one of the offerings up here?
Well, that's what's really fascinating is right now the television industry is a $70 billion, that's billion-dollar business a year in advertising. And what's happening, though, is a lot of the viewing, a lot of audiences are going to places where they watch television or where they watch videos without ads, whether that's Netflix or Amazon or even Hulu recently introduced this new ad-supported an ad-free offering where you pay a couple of extra dollars a month to be able to watch these shows without ads. And so it is kind of this very interesting development that's happening in the media business where for so long a lot of content was supported by both advertising and subscriptions, and now it's moving more and more toward advertising free.
But, Ben, I'm trying to get at what people are going to – I get what they're going to listen to here from how you describe it.
Sure.
In terms of what they're going to see – compare what will be here, let's say, to what you can see on Netflix.
Right. So, Tom, let me see if I can give you my best interpretation of why somebody would pay for cat videos.
Mm-hmm.
So the first is that obviously YouTube is not just cat videos.
Of course.
So, you know, we know that there are these creators like PewDiePie or Lily Singh or the Fine Brothers. But again, when people look at that content, they often look at it kind of scornfully. I think that's a mistake because this stuff is often very juvenile. It's often sort of the lowest common denominator. But so is the most successful stuff on television, right? I mean, this is no more lowbrow than Real Housewives of Atlanta or, you know, Duck Dynasty or something like that.
In a way, TV has merged toward YouTube in its own volition.
Right. So you're not going to see YouTube producing House of Cards or, you know, Mad Men because those shows, while critically acclaimed, don't have great ratings. And YouTube is, you know, the biggest video portal in the world, and what succeeds there is, you know, in some sense, the lowest common denominator. Not to knock the shows there. Some of them are amazing. But I also think it's worth noting that on YouTube, you can find all sorts of amazing high-quality stuff. You know, I go there for, you know, mixed martial arts instructional videos. My dad goes there to watch blues guitar. You can go there for incredible nature documentaries. So, you know, you should think of it also as just the world's largest library. And so in that sense, you have this long tail of stuff, much of which is very high quality and extremely niche. And that is part of what makes YouTube successful.
And that's what we heard Kinsel talking about when he talks about this highly fragmented world, I guess, Ben. They've got all the fragments.
Yeah, so that is the dream, right, that Robert Kinsel has always been pursuing is, let's say you wanted to make a television channel about kite surfing. You could never get enough people to watch that channel 24 hours a day to make it a viable commercial entity. But if you said, hey, on YouTube, 100,000, 200,000 people will watch this kite surfing channel, and 10 or 20 or 30% of them will sign up at $9.99 a month, suddenly you could be, you know, producing revenue that could be a good living for the person who's making that channel. And so that sort of micro channel vision is what they want to happen on YouTube. Now, I should say, they tried these a la carte options, you know, pay for a channel or tip your favorite creator.
Mm-hmm.
And that didn't really work on YouTube because I think It didn't apply to every channel. It wasn't universal enough. So with YouTube Red, it's like you get everything. You get, you know, every video, and that money will hopefully grow into a large pool, which will then be, you know, parceled out to all the creators based on the amount of time people spend watching their channels.
Let's get a taste of it. Of course, there are people with a lot of followers, subscribers on YouTube. Here's Smosh, sketch comedy team, produces videos just for YouTube. They have over 21 million subscribers. Here's a clip from the most recent video. The actors talk about their ratings as people reviewed on Yelp.
We're checking out our personal reviews on Yelp. got 5 stars because people like my biceps. I don't even work out, so.
I mean, I got 5 stars, but that's only because everyone thinks I'm this girl named Mari.
Yeah, you look nothing like her. That's not Mari. I have no idea who that is.
$9.99 a month and all that can be yours. Oh, here, video blogger, comedian Jenna Marbles, over 15 million subscribers to her YouTube channel. Here in a recent video blog, she's riffing on why she doesn't like California avocados. This video has close to 1.5 million views. Here's a clip.
Here is why avocados, especially in the state of California, are the absolute worst, by Jenna Mori Marbles. And then, you know, leave your retorts for me, because I already know I'm being the unpopular opinion puffin over here, okay? I know I am. It's about to get avocado real in here. Plenty more where that came from.
Emily Steele, Masterpiece Theater, this is not. But tastes are all over the place and YouTube's all over the place. Maybe it's the net that captures the audience.
Right, and one of the things that we're seeing, too, is for an entire generation that didn't grow up with cable, they didn't grow up with traditional television, this is kind of where they spend a lot of their time after school, watching shows. Instead of watching shows on Nickelodeon and MTV, they're watching shows where they're watching Jenna Marbles or they're watching Smosh. But one of the big questions that a lot of the big media companies have, at least, is whether people are going to be willing to pay $10 a month for this sort of a service where you can pay that same amount and get much more professionally produced content on Netflix.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about YouTube looking to charge for ad-free watching, listening, the coming of YouTube Red, and what it means for TV, cable, streaming, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, all the rest, what it means for our sense of what we pay for when it comes to information, entertainment. You can join us this hour. Do you still think of YouTube as goofy home videos and stupid cat videos? Can you see it as a major media and entertainment destination? And are we happy now to co-mingle home videos and high-gloss Hollywood productions all in one place? Do you expect that at YouTube, YouTube Red? YouTube says it's more than just ad-free. They're going to take some of their big stars and team them up with Hollywood powerhouses to put a little more gloss on them. Here's one of them. Biggest stars, PewDiePie on YouTube, has been teamed up with the creator of the AMC series The Walking Dead to create an original series for YouTube Red called Scare PewDiePie. The show's now set to premiere on Red next year. Here's a clip from the trailer.
What up, bros? This is PewDiePie. Scare PewDiePie is going to be me getting put into live horror games. I think what my fans are really going to like about the show, it's taking what I already do, you know, get scared of horror games, but to the next level.
Not everybody's happy about it. Chris Thompson of the popular Sup Daily 06 vlog on YouTube said he's heard little from the company about the changes in the way creators make money from YouTube's new subscription service. Here he is venting his frustration in a video posted, of course, on YouTube after the announcement last week titled YouTube Red is Awful.
Google takes a ridiculous percentage of your income from views. So by the time Google takes their cut, my manager takes their cut, the government takes their cut, I'm really only taking home 20% of the revenue that I create. So with that small of a percentage actually going to the creator, other income sources are necessary.
One creator not happy with the payout. Emily Steele is with us from the New York Times, Ben Popper from The Verge. You can link to his story about all this, Red Dawn, at our website, onpointradio.org. Michael Wolf with Activate joins us in a moment. Jimmy in Charlotte, North Carolina. Jimmy, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah.
I just wanted to say that it's completely unnecessary to pay for a YouTube Red subscription if you're just looking to get rid of advertisements. Basically, every web browser out there, Chrome, Firefox, Safari, you can download a free extension that will block all advertisements, especially YouTube advertisements, on whatever page you visit. To your point that you made about the YouTube original series, that may be a different aspect of it, where people may actually need to buy to see whatever show it is. But if you're just trying to block ads, it's not worth it.
Jimmy, we got it. Ben Popper, We've talked plenty about ad blockers here and what they mean, and there's been a big outcry lately. Maybe that's because Google didn't want ad blockers because, you know, Apple's been supporting them more. Now Google's got a problem with them if they want to charge here. What about Jimmy's point? Why do it? Why, you know, just block the ads?
Right. Jimmy's got a great point. So I think that part of offering the subscription service is an awareness that lots and lots of consumers already do this. And so, you know, why force them to download an ad blocker, which doesn't provide you with a great experience? You're still going to end up sitting through 10 or 30 seconds of, you know, basically blackness before every video.
Yeah.
And, you know, another thing is if you care about the people you're watching, if you're a big fan, you want to reward them. So with an ad blocker, you know, nobody's getting paid. If you feel it's worth, you know, a little bit of your money to support the creator, that's another reason. Jimmy also made the point there's the originals. I think one of the other big features we haven't really talked about is the power feature. So you can take videos offline now, and you can also play them in the background, two things you couldn't do before.
That's new. That will be with YouTube Red, but not with straight YouTube.
Right. So for subscribers, you're going to be able to take videos offline. I just took a bunch of long plane trips while reporting this story. I would have loved to have put 12 YouTube videos on my phone to watch while I'm in the air without connectivity. I think that would be a terrific experience. And so that's part of the value that you get for that $10 a month.
Emily, what about these new productions that they're offering here, YouTube Originals? I don't know how seriously to take it, how big a deal that is. This is not original like HBO series. It's not like, you know, The Wire or The Sopranos. It's PewDiePie juiced up with more studio support or something.
Right. And it will be really interesting to see how this all pans out, because at the same time, you look at services like Netflix and Amazon. Netflix is putting $6 billion, that's billion dollars, in cash into making original productions and also acquiring other professionally produced content in the next year.
Wow.
And a YouTube and Netflix subscription is about the same as what this YouTube Red subscription is going to be. So for the viewer who's really looking for that professionally produced, really sleek, really great production value, good narrative storytelling, those sorts of things, paying $10 a month for the YouTube service might not be the best way to spend that cash.
I'm trying still to get a sense of what all is going to be up here. I mean, I see a story out just in the last couple of days. ESPN has begun removing its videos from YouTube because, I guess, because of Red.
Well, and
yeah,
what's really interesting is a lot of the media companies kind of begrudgingly decided to participate in this service. They weren't very happy with the revenue split, where they get about 55% of the revenues generated through the subscription service, and YouTube gets about 45% of those revenues. And what they said is that they felt kind of like they were strong-armed into participating, because the idea was that if they didn't include their videos in this ad-free subscription-supported service, that they would have those videos pulled down from the service in the U.S.
From YouTube entirely. They'd disappear from the United States on YouTube.
Right.
That's like going dark.
Exactly. And so what we saw just in the last couple of days is ESPN is not going to participate, and so a lot of their videos will not be available on
all the sports clips, game highlights, and all that stuff you can find now.
Right.
Exactly.
So, Tom, I mean, I think one of the things to think about, you're sort of asking again and again, you know, what is the audience for this really? And so I think it's important to note that YouTube and, you know, Robert Kinsel, their head of business, does not think that subscription will now or even any time in the near future be, you know, the majority of their business. They believe more than 90% will still be free and ad supported. So they don't think that this is going to appeal to everyone, and especially not to older adults who are looking for high gloss content that you would find on AMC or Netflix.
Yep.
But, you know, for younger people, a lot of times when they're watching somebody like PewDiePie or Lily Singh or Jenna Marbles, it's about a one-on-one conversation. They feel very connected to that person. It's a very intimate setting with the, you know, in their room with the webcam.
Mm-hmm.
That's a whole new kind of entertainment. And I think they expect those people, many of whom have tens of millions of fans, to be able to draw in, you know, millions of subscribers.
I mean, this really gets fascinating. The people are willing to pay for that kind of intimate connection with PewDiePie. Swede sitting in his room, just kind of riffing and joking. I mean, I suppose in a way, Emily, it's like sitting with a comedian in the past, feeling a little more intimately connected. Somebody just, you know, a comedian riffing every day, it can seem like for you. Maybe it's not so different from paying for a comedian special if they were dribbling it out every day, a little bit at a time.
Exactly. And you feel kind of much more of an intimate connection with that YouTube star, or you feel this personal investment that if you help to support them, then you're helping their livelihood. You've seen recently, too, a number of different services pop up. There's one called You Now that is this live video chat interactive feed where people will give their allowance, they'll give money after school to these kids. And there's this family called the Flipping Ninjas where it's this kid who's in high school in North Carolina and he just kind of flips around his basement and people support him because they think what he's doing is really cool.
I don't know if this is great. This is the fragmentation and YouTube follows it, or if this is the decline of civilization as we know it. One call and then to Michael. It's Sean in Ontario, Canada. Sean, thanks for calling. You're on.
Thank you for taking my call. I think $10 a month is a little bit too much. Like for myself, I basically watch, documentaries and news programs on YouTube. I used to have a Netflix account and I canceled it because I was not happy with the content. And, you know, with YouTube, you have a vast majority of different programming. But when I'm on my cell phone and I'm watching YouTube, and I'm getting a lot of commercials, it's sucking up my bandwidth. So, you know, I may look at it at $10 a month, but it would be way more attractive at a lesser cost.
$9.99 seems to be the sort of a price point of art all over the media world now. But it is interesting. Emily, are people going to stack these up? $9.99 for this, $9.99 for Netflix, and right on down?
Well, that's really the big question that people are wondering now is, especially if you cancel your cable subscription, but then you start adding on all of these other services. So you pay for Amazon Prime, you pay for Netflix, you pay for Hulu, you get HBO and you get Showtime, and then now you add on YouTube. And NBC recently released this new comedy channel called CISO that's a couple dollars a month. And once you start adding all of that up, is it more or more than what your cable bill would be each month? Or should you go back to traditional cable and sign up to get those shows there?
Emily Steele, please stand by in New York. Ben Popper. Michael Wolff joins us now from New York as well. Co-founder, managing director of Activate, a strategy consulting firm for media and entertainment and tech companies. Former president, COO of MTV Networks, has been on the board of Yahoo. Michael Wolff, welcome to On Point. Thanks very much for being here.
Great to be here.
What matters about YouTube Red, Michael?
I think that there are some places where I'm not fully in agreement that this is going to be a service that people are going to pay for. I think that there's a couple things. I think one of them is, yes, there are lots of millennials who are not paying for cable, but they're still watching a ton of traditional television. The audience that's the least engaged with television is still watching 80 hours a month, and they're watching things like ESPN and college sports and regional sports, and all sorts of shows, American Horror Story and Walking Dead. And so, for the most part, they're still engaged with television. The YouTube and internet video is a different mode for them. It's short video snacks, and they watch them mainly on mobile. And so I think that as a result, they're going to keep watching, and they're going to watch even more. But shelling out $9.99 a month for YouTube Red, it's going to be a challenge because especially when they've been getting it up to now for free. The second thing is what may be more appealing for YouTube Red is YouTube as a music service. When you strip out the streams that include video, YouTube is the largest streaming music service in the U.S. and probably in the world. And YouTube has so many tracks that the other music streaming services don't have. It has mixes and remixes and playlists and tracks that artists recorded but never made it to a label. And so about 100 million tracks versus Spotify and Apple Music, which have about 30 million. So paying $9.99 a month for YouTube Red as a music streaming service may be more valuable than YouTube Red as a video streaming service.
Ben, where do you see the biggest value? Does it come down to music? Maybe video is as Emily said, is the dog that chases the truck here.
Yeah, I think Michael's right in the sense that there probably aren't a ton of people who would sign up for YouTube Red over having cable or, say, Netflix and Hulu. But when you break it out and say, hey, you're getting a music streaming service. Literally, if you sign up for YouTube Red and pay $10 a month, you get Google Play Music, which is a very nice, well, full-featured music service, a great competitor to Spotify and Apple. You get that whole service. Then you get YouTube, which, as Michael pointed out, has tens of millions of tracks, live concerts, remixes, lyric versions that don't exist on the streaming music services. And then you get the world's biggest video library on top of that. So for $9.99 a month, you really should think of it, you know, the caller from Canada was saying, I wasn't sure it's worth $10 a month. I didn't want to pay for Netflix. You know, say to yourself, do I already pay for Spotify or Apple Music? Would I be happier if I had all of that music and all of YouTube, you know, ad-free and offline? Because I think that's really the value proposition.
Let's go to Andrew in Fort Mill, South Carolina. Andrew, you're on the air. What do you think?
Hey, I absolutely will pay for these services because they don't have ads. And I think Hulu is the only one that still has ads with their paid services, and I will not subscribe to it. But I'm going to tell you what the key here is to these streaming services, is that they are giving the big networks to run for their money because the content is better. So people are going to pay for these services. Eventually, people will come around to YouTube, but they are going to come around and start paying for these services because the content is better, there are no ads, and the content is tailored to the subscribers. So I love it, and I will pay for it.
Andrew, let me ask you about that, though. I mean, we've heard a lot about the golden age of television that's come with cable and streaming services and original content produced there. And yes, you know, you can go on TV, and it's a lot of the dancing shows and reality TV shows can seem kind of like rubbish. But really, YouTube is another advance in quality? Would you give up your cable subscription for YouTube, for PewDiePie?
Yes, for the sake of the content. If the content has to be better is the thing. The original programming has to be better than what the big networks are offering. So the big networks are offering a lot of trash content. So as long as the streaming services like YouTube, Netflix, and all the other streaming services, as long as they make content that is quality programming, just like NPR, then people will be willing to pay for it, especially if it doesn't have advertising.
Yeah, Andrew, I appreciate your call. Michael Wolff, speak to this quality issue. I mean, I am not an expert in the full range of YouTube, but when I look at the most popular things, I was joking before, but this isn't Masterpiece Theater. This isn't The Wire. This isn't The Sopranos. This isn't... Is this what we mean by quality now, or is this something else? Is this a third thing? Like, is this the intimacy inside joke arena?
I don't think I think that everything in this begins with the user. And if you look at what users enjoy, it is YouTube creators like Smosh and KSI. And I think the user has to be the one who ultimately judges quality. And quality is what they enjoy, what they want to watch. And in fact, their tie to Ben and Emily's points about their ties to these creators are very tight. And one of the issues is going to be the user's sense about whether or not these stars are being treated fairly and whether or not their part of their $9.99 is going to go to the people that they enjoy the most. And I think that's a big issue. I think it's very different than other media because there is a sense that people who are on television make a lot of money, that people in movies make a lot of money. And, yes, the biggest YouTube stars are making big cash, but the audience, the users are going to wonder how well are the next tier of stars being taken care of for that $9.99 a month they're paying.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about YouTube looking to charge for ad-free watching and listening. It's the coming of YouTube Red goes up this week. And what it means for TV, cable, streaming, iTunes, Spotify, Pandora, all the rest, with Michael Wolff at Activate, joins us from New York, former president, COO of MTV Networks. Ben Popper is here from The Verge, business editor there. Emily Steele covers TV and the media business for The New York Times. She joins us from New York as well. You can join us. Are you ready to pay $9.99 a month for YouTube, YouTube Red? What's popular up there? Here's a clip from the YouTube channel Epic Rap Battles of History. 12 million subscribers. Most recent season, the creators and rappers Nice Peter and Epic Lloyd rap battle as RoboCop and Terminator. I'm Robo-
on C-3PO and the mic control like all the lead. Your move, creep.
Wrong. I have detailed files, the conclusion of your trilogy. That movie failed Detroit worse than the automotive industry. I am T-800 Cyberdyne Systems Model 101, and I'll be sweeping up your rubble bits like paper clips when I'm done.
$9.99 a month, and you can have all that you can handle. Jenica in Nashville, Tennessee. Jenica, thanks for calling. You're on.
Hi, Tom. I'm a millennial, and I think I would pay $9.99 a month for this service because, for example, I watch shows like Last Week Tonight with John Oliver,
yep.
And they always put the most important section on YouTube every week, which mm-hmm. is what I usually watch it for. It's the most informative part. So instead of, like, you know, borrowing somebody's HBO Go account or whatever, I can just get it on YouTube.
Jenica,
and $9.99 is like 2 coffee drinks, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
So it's not that much.
How old are you, Jenica, if I may ask?
Yeah, 24.
24. And so you don't want the whole thing with John Oliver, but give you the highlights, and you're happy to pay a little bit a month for that times all the other shows you want the highlights from. What about a drama, like, I don't know, some HBO show?
Yeah, I would miss that, but I can always go to somebody's house and watch that rather than... but I also think I love the idea of supporting the artists as well.
Mm-hmm.
I think it's really wonderful to do that. And, you know, a lot of these artists are working so hard. My boyfriend won a sing-off show, and it's like, that's how they make most of their fans, is through YouTube. So I think by supporting these people, you know, you're like, you can beat the people that have the most money being thrown at them, and, like, you let the less popular people get a chance at fame. And
bringing up new artists, maybe right there on YouTube Red. Jenica, I really appreciate your call. I mean, Emily Steele, is this another yet shrinkage of attention span? You know, John Oliver's show's not that long, but Jenica's happy just to get the highlights of it. She doesn't need all the razzmatazz, the opening, the warm-up, the throat clearing. Just give me the best bit. She'll pay $9.99 a month, $9.99 for the best bits of lots of shows, I guess, and who cares about the whole offering?
Yeah, I wouldn't think about it as much as a decline or more kind of mix of your attention span. Mm-hmm. But it's kind of more people want to be able to pick what they want to watch, when they want to watch it, and to pay for the things that they really find value for. Mm-hmm. So maybe she really loves these bands, or maybe she really wants to see those clips of John mm-hmm. Oliver, but she doesn't want to see the rest of what's on the HBO Go subscription.
Or not even the rest of his show. I mean, she certainly won't sit and watch broadcast television, give her whatever they want to shove at her. She won't even wait for John Oliver to do his whole thing for her. She wants exactly what she wants, I guess, Emily.
But the thing is she doesn't have to. And she didn't grow up in an age where she had to sit and watch TV and watch all the commercials and watch what was programmed at a time when big entertainment executives in New York and LA decided to put that show on TV. She's grown up in this age where she can watch what she wants to watch when she wants to, and that's what she wants to pay for, too.
I mean, Ben Popper, when Robert Kinsel mm-hmm. at YouTube talks about this fragmentation, mm-hmm. I mean, he's being very literal there. Here, even existing shows fragmented, and viewers, listeners now picking up just the pieces that they want.
Right. Well, I don't think we should be too concerned about the decline of civilization. Your caller was saying she wants to watch the sort of most informative piece of John Oliver, which is a bit of hard news combined with a bit of comedy.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think she made an important point, and this goes to Michael's point that closed the last segment. She wants to reward the creators. She was happy to see her boyfriend succeed on there. And one of the things I think that's so fascinating about YouTube is it's a completely democratic service. You know, anybody with a webcam can start a stream, and they can collect 55% of the ad revenue and soon 55%, you know, of their cut of the subscription revenue. And so in that sense, you had played a clip before with a creator, you know, worrying mm-hmm. about his cut. But I think YouTube is offering the same cut to Disney and ESPN and Viacom as they are to you or me if we decide to create on YouTube, and I think that's a wonderful thing.
Let's go to Jordan in New Milford, Connecticut. Jordan, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hello, Tom. Thank you for having my call. Speaking as a small content creator, I write for the site blackmanandrobin.com, and I realized that our site would need to have a video component since we primarily focus on video games.
Yeah.
I chose not to put advertisements on my videos on YouTube, because I realized at the time that the money from the ads just wasn't worth it in comparison to the little annoyance it would be to my audience. And a lot of folks, since I was pretty new at the time, would have just signed right on off instead of sticking through the ad to watch the
so
video.
So does this sound better to you, Jordan? You'll get 55% of, I don't know how it works exactly, but of something that, that YouTube collects on from viewers?
Well, seeing as I've grown a bit, definitely. It does, 55% sounds like a better deal, so long as people watch. I mean, I make very long-form content. I actually make a weekly gaming show, and I've discovered that the money from advertising on television is way better. You see, I have it runs on Comcast in Georgia, as well as on a network called Soul of the South, and through this hotel network called Zonzia, and 500,000 hotel rooms. So thanks to these deals I have, the money from that is way better than what YouTube's offering. That said, this YouTube Red deal might actually be worthwhile. Now, I'd also like to mention regarding the original content, I feel that unless what YouTube Red offers with regards to original content is very strong, it's not going to go very far. The reason for this is the same issue that, I'm not sure if you guys are familiar with the PlayStation Vita, but essentially Sony created their own console called the PlayStation Vita, and it seemed to disregard the current media landscape of handheld video gaming today.
Yeah.
And the end result is that the PlayStation Vita is not doing well at all.
Jordan, we'll take a look at that. I appreciate your call, and good luck with Batman and Robin. One more content creator, maybe Signal Mountain, Tennessee. Nathan, you're on, Nathan.
Hey, notwithstanding, and Tom, thanks for taking the call. This is one of the better shows out there. Notwithstanding the fact that YouTube is basically an open source environment, and 90% of it is too personal or too, too insignificant to worry about for most people, the conversation you all are having, and I appreciate the conversation, is just unrealistic in the sense of actual creators. I'm a writer. I'm 55. I've been in the business. I've been a musician for years.
Okay.
The real truth of this is that everything that we do is stolen, and this will be another way to turn the pipeline farther toward the big companies and this fantasy world we're talking about where people who have produced serious content are going to get paid. It doesn't exist at all, so the conversation is specious.
Well, but they're saying they're going to split it 55% for you.
That's a lie.
A lie.
Tom,
Nathan,
can I address that?
Yes. Who have I got here? Is that Michael, Ben?
It's Ben. Yeah. So, you know, I think that there is a lot of fear about this, and that's justifiable, and a lot of suspicion about this. And it is true that, you know, if you're just relying on your advertising revenue on YouTube, it can be hard to make it as a small creator. But, you know, I think that you will find there are actually millions of people who now make a living as YouTube creators who are not don't have millions and millions of followers. So I don't think it's specious to say that, you know, the cut that, you know, YouTube gives out is enough to support creators. And all that content is not junk. You know, there's people who do shows about science and shows about art and shows about dance and music. You know, sports fans who make a living from advertising. Now, they've often supplemented that with crowdfunding and offline things, selling T-shirts or going on tours. And that was to better access direct, you know, fan support and love. And that's what YouTube Red does because it monetizes people's attention at a much higher rate than advertising. And just to clarify, the way it will work on the subscription side is everybody will subscribe. Let's say a million people subscribe. That's, you know, $10 million a month. Then Google takes 45% and there's 55% left over, 5.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
All the subscribers who watch, their attention will be divided out. And so if somebody watches you for an hour, you get, you know, an hour's worth of that revenue pool. And so the caller in before who said he makes long-form content, if lots of people are watching a full hour of his stuff, he's going to get, you know, more money than he would just from, you know, people clicking on it and leaving after 20 seconds.
Michael Wolff, Emily.
I was just going to add to that to say that it is really interesting that you see a lot of independent creators kind of worried that they won't get a share of the revenue. At the same time, a lot of the big media companies are kind of rolling their eyes at this new service, saying that they don't really think that the money that it generates will really affect their bottom line. And the other development that I think is really interesting is you see services like Vimeo pitch themselves as a home to creators who want to have more direct access to their fans and sell their content directly to their fans without having to worry about a big site like YouTube taking a cut of their revenues or even having ads on their site. So you can have a lot more control on these other services that are popping up.
Michael Wolff, what will the big media companies be offering via YouTube when it comes to video? Music, I understand, but when it comes to video, I mean, Disney's in here. What will they offer?
I think the big media companies are already making their bets through what are called multi-channel networks, which are their management of multiple YouTube creators. And I think there's going to be two modalities. I think that long form content will likely continue to appear on places like cable and broadcast. And the reason is there's just so much more money for them in that business, and it's guaranteed money. But I think that they will support individual creators. And part of it is so far the big media companies have yet to have a hit on YouTube, or frankly, the big internet companies have yet to have hits on web video. And by the way, Netflix, although Netflix is spending an enormous amount of money on content, we really don't know what people are viewing. More likely, they're not viewing on a wide basis shows like House of Cards. They're more likely viewing things like, they're binge viewing on things like How I Met Your Mother. This world of original content production is, and in terms of professional content, it's not clear that it's hitting the internet in the same way. What is for sure is that these individual creators are gaining huge audiences, and they're not just the stars of the future, they're today's stars.
What do you think, if I may ask, Michael, what does this mean for culturally? I mean, the half-hour drama or full-hour drama worked for the broadcast television format and advertisers, but if millennials are carving out more of their time to give to this kind of a venue, where does that take our sense of what is a cultural artifact, of what is worthy of sitting and watching and responding to, Michael?
What's fascinating is that on television, the number of dramas, of hour-long dramas, is actually increasing. People are watching. On the same time, we have this bifurcation. People are watching longer shows on television, and they're watching longer shows that are on pay services like Hulu and Netflix. But at the same time, they're watching these shorter shows. And what does it mean for our culture? I think overall, people are consuming more video. And video is really sort of overtaking the world.
But video is just a medium. I mean, what's in it? Let me hold that thought for 1 second. Rob in Harrisonburg, Virginia. Rob, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. The point I have to make is I'm a college art professor, and what I notice often in my classes is the students, I think it's because of the way they're looking at media and finding such specific, like, small moments in the media, that they're very apathetic towards everything that doesn't have to do with them or what they want. And it's really hard to get the students to embrace other ideas outside of their life or their worldview.
So what do you want, Rob? You want to set it up like Clockwork Orange, put toothpicks on their eyelids and make them watch great moments in the history of art?
That's kind of what I've been doing, actually. All my assignments, I basically tell them they have to watch this, like, these set of films to kind of start thinking about things. It's really weird that I have to, like, wave a grade in front of them to get them to want to embrace culture.
But broadcast television, you know, was characterized decades ago as the vast wasteland and all that. It's not as though it's new to our society to have, art professors worried about what people are looking at, Rob. Is that so different here?
I don't know if that it is. I think it's just like I wonder if it has something to do with the internet and the way, like, attention spans are shortening. But, yeah, that is a good point.
Our art professor worried a little bit here. Emily, where do you think it takes us? The appeal to my taste right now and just the form I want it, is this a net good thing? Or was there, when the only entertainment was to go down to the Greek theater on the side of the Parthenon, the Acropolis, and watch whatever was on that night, were we better off?
Well, I feel like I don't think it's so... black or white. I don't think it's good or bad. But I think what is really fascinating is you're seeing a huge diversity of voices now that are able to create mm-hmm. shows that are developing these bases of fans that have really passionate followings. And I think that's really interesting. I think it's interesting that at Amazon, there's a producer like Jill Soloway who's trying to have a very feminist point of view when she produces a show about a father who comes out as transgender. And I don't know if that's a show that we would see on television 5 years ago. And so I think it's a really fascinating development in our culture today.
Down with cultural imperialism, up with everything that blooms on YouTube. And if you're willing to pay for it, no ads, YouTube Red. I want to thank all three of you for being with us today. Emily Steele at the New York Times, thanks so much for joining us, Emily.
Thanks for having me.
And Ben Popper at The Verge, thanks for coming on, Ben.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Michael Wolff at Activate, thanks for joining us today, Michael.
Pleasure. And all of my research is on our site, activate.com.
Activate.com, check it out. Thank you very much, Michael Wolff. Listeners, you can continue the conversation, get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. I'm at Tom Ashbrook, NPR, on Twitter. This is On Point.